features the Fertile Ground Festival, Portland's largest performing arts festival, with festival director Nicole Lane. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Andre Middleton features Pocas Radicales, a queer Latina art collective working toward community engagement through art and activism.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is Nacho Drum, showing Thursday, January 21st at 7 p.m. Released in 1993, Nacho Drum is a French documentary about the Romani people's journey from Northwest India to Spain, consisting primarily of music. Again, that's Nacho Drum, Thursday, January 21st, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, on Thursday, January 14th at 7 p.m., KBOO at the Clinton will show Freedom on My Mind, How Voting Rights Were Won in Mississippi, with post-film Poetic Justice, open mic poetry event with poet and MC John Slaughter. Freedom on My Mind chronicles the complex and compelling history of the Mississippi voter registration struggles of 1961 to 1964. The interracial nature of the campaign, the tensions and conflicts, the fears and hopes. Again, that's Freedom on My Mind, Thursday, January 14th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to music by Molly Bauckham. Hear more of her music at harpmolly.com. The Fertile Ground Festival is back. Portland's largest performing arts festival returns for its eighth year for 11 days this month in the city of Portland. We'll hear from festival director Nicole Lane about the new works featured this year. She'll be joined by artists from two of the original shows debuting at the festival. Lots to talk about, so stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the studio is the festival director of Fertile Ground, Nicole Lane. Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me again, Dee Mae.
It's like 8 years in a row,
right?
I know. And with her is solo performer Faith Helma of I Hate Positive Thinking. I really do. I hate it so much.
Oh, good.
I'm so glad. Welcome back, Faith. It's been a while. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Good to have you here. And playwright Sue Mock. Hello.
Hello.
Old timer with me. And actress Grace Carter of The Yellow Paper.
Hello. Hello.
They're both from The Yellow Paper, so welcome. Welcome back, all of you, to Station Studio. Now, it's the eighth year, and, you know, always what makes this festival unique, Nicole, is that it's uncurated. Is
right.
that correct,
right.
still? And it's anyone, really, who wants to do this, and it qualifies as an original, new work,
correct.
Can be in the show, in the festival.
Right. There's really only two parameters, that the work is new, or it's a new version of a work. And by work, I mean theater,
dance.
Multi
yeah, film too right
film this year again. It has to be new work,
yeah,
and then it has to be Portland generated. So the bulk of the creative impetus has to come from Portland artists.
And it, you know, I have the next question: Have you turned anyone down? But if you have, it's because it isn't new
correct
work?
Right. If there's a theater troupe from Montana who would like to come perform in Fertile Ground,
you can't take it with you or something.
Yeah, and I just have to say no.
Arsenic and old lace. Yeah, that just wouldn't go.
Yeah, right? And sometimes it is about the work too. Right. If it's
unless it's a new version
right
of that play.
Right. You know?
All right. So it's really. I don't know if it's come to as a surprise to you, but it's turned into the largest performing arts festival in Portland.
Oh, absolutely.
I believe Willamette Week coined that recently.
Yeah. Yes.
Is that true?
I believe so. I can't think of another something similar.
So I mean, it's true until somebody says no.
It's true. If the Willamette Week says it.
That's right. Well, 11 days of offerings from Thursday, January 21st to Sunday, January 31st. And that's a lot. How many shows and offerings and workshops and events are being featured within that 11 days?
I tell you, it is so hard to count. I try to count every year and am flummoxed.
I like that word.
I just go with more than and then a number.
More than.
And so last year was more than 75.
Right.
Depending on how you count it, this year is just a little bit smaller. It's more than 65.
That's still a lot.
And I call them acts of creation because that spans, that's not just theater work or dance work or whatever work. But like, for example, in the animation piece alone, there is a variety of pieces. So if I counted every single one of them.
Oh, what's the animation piece? What are you talking about?
So there's an animation
like a mini festival?
There's a little mini festival, correct. It's called Homebrew, and it's the Portland Animation. It's just one show, one day, but they wanted to be involved.
So animation shorts for one day.
Yeah.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, but then you look at PDX Playwrights. PDX Playwrights has 13 pieces.
Exactly.
And in one show, there could be three.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes the same for the Groove and Greenhouse, Polaris. So it depends on how you count it, on how many.
Oh, yeah.
Acts of creation
could
exist.
So more than is kind of a safe thing for quite a lot more than. There are also discussion panels and workshops, and so that sort of opens it up even more.
And then there's lunchtime readings. There's a little bit of everything for everyone, and there are multiple things happening every single day.
It'd
be
easy
to
see
six shows on a Saturday, for example.
Well, I recommend listeners to follow along by visiting your website, which is fertilegroundpdx.org. You can also go to stageandstudio.org for the link to the Fertile Ground site if you can't find fertilegroundpdx.org. There's a calendar, and then you also have this wonderful booklet, some of which I think we can leave at KBOO and people might be able to pick up.
Sure, right? The books are always,
they're
over
everywhere,
town.
Though, right now.
The best place to know you can get one would be potentially KBOO or Artist Rep during off,
any
during
of the
theaters.
Lobby hours. Yeah. Right. So two of the shows at the festival this year are The Yellow Wallpaper and I Hate Positive Thinking. I actually want to remind people you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, and we are talking about Fertile Ground. And I want to start off with Faith Helma and your show, because I love that title,
That's
it's all
great,
so
counter
to the power of positive thinking. And even though I believe in it, I believe in affirmations and stuff, sometimes you just want to go, I hate these positive things.
Stand up
to resist it. So where did the idea for this emerge?
Well, the idea came because I do in fact hate positive thinking.
What is it that you hate about it?
So I've hated it for a long time. And
it's starting to turn into like a group
at some
here.
Point you have to stop torturing people at parties with tirades and instead torture audience members. But no, I decided it was enough. There was enough there that I thought I should make a show about it.
Does it seem like it's phony sometimes, or what is it about it?
To me, I think it it doesn't work. Sometimes it works.
Yeah, sometimes it does.
Sometimes it works. Yeah. And this is the thing. I mean, of course, there's gray area. Of course, I don't hate everything about it. But I think there's threads in positive thinking that are actually really unhealthy and that actually have the opposite effect. So, and that actually, encourage you to turn away from uncomfortable emotions. And in my life, everything good that's come has come when I've walked into those uncomfortable emotions.
And so, faced them as opposed to sweep it under the rug.
Yeah, and opened up to them and opened up to the paradox and the contradiction that's part of life. So that's one reason.
Yeah, I can hear that from you. It's almost like this Band-Aid solution. Like if you just think positive, then all these problems will go away.
Yeah, and it's also a way of being blind to the bigger problems in the world. I think, could be a really insulting thing to say to a Syrian refugee. Just think positively.
And good things will work out for you.
Yeah. Right. I think if you just manifest.
Right. Just click your heels three times, right?
Yeah. And all that is to say, of course, there are ways in which, our minds have the power to change things.
Right.
So And that contradiction is kind of what the show is about.
You know, you go through sort of the phases of that and the pros and cons of what positive thinking is about.
Yeah. Because I'm a coach now in my life. I'm basically kind of a life coach, which...
Well, I was going to mention that because you are a hand-to-mouth ensemble member and a performance artist, but you're also... What is the coach and creative guide? What do you do as that?
Yeah, over the last year and a half, I've started this new idea of working with people to coach them in unlocking their creative skills and using those creative abilities to transform their lives. And... Yeah, as I've been doing that, I'm like, wait a minute, though. How is that different than positive thinking?
Right. So how is it different from positive thinking?
Good question. I think the idea of that your mind is powerful and that your imagination is powerful, you can have that approach, but also follow where it leads and not feel like you need to control it or that you... are at the center of the universe. That's, I guess, my approach is that you can, follow these tools where they lead.
So you've been taking your experiences as a coach and creative guide and then creating this solo show from that?
Yeah. I mean, I sort of think of it as the performative version of the coaching work I've been doing.
Well, I understand. So a lot of it is multimedia, I assume, one of the things that says here is that I understand that no one in the audience will be asked to dance like a jackass. So.
No, only I will do that.
All right. So dancing is part of the show.
There is some dancing, yes. Some bad dancing. This show is a departure for me in a lot of ways because in most of my work with hand to mouth, over the last 15 years, I, use a lot of music, a lot of collaborators. We're all working as a team, and mostly for practical reasons, because I have a 2.5-year-old now. I was like, I don't have time to like work with stuff or talk to people, so I'm just going to make this show.
Right.
You know, in those moments, like when I get out of the shower and I'm like, oh, that's an idea. And I'm like, that counts. That's rehearsal. Okay. So it's just me. It's just me and my ideas.
It frees you up so much in your schedule. I mean, you're so easy to work with, right?
I'm really great to work with. I'm fantastic.
Well, describe a moment from the show. I mean, you said you had a short piece that maybe you could do for the audience.
Yeah.
Well, or our audience right now, our listeners.
If it's okay, I'll talk directly to your radio audience
all right,
right now.
And this is as sort of an example of I hate positive thinking.
Yes. So hello audience. I have a question. The question we're going to think about right now is, do the visions in our minds have power? And that's a big question. If I envision something strongly, if I have it clearly in my mind, can that vision change the world? And that's something that I think we could actually test right now in a small way. So we're going to try an experiment. I'm going to articulate a vision that I have for the world, and we're going to see if by articulating it to you,
yes.
you here in the room with me and you in radio land, if somehow that makes the vision come to pass. And so we're not going to know here and now in the room if the experiment succeeds or fails. You're going to have to keep your eyes open in coming days and weeks and see if,
if it does, I hope that you'll write me at stagetheletterinstudio@aol.com or post it on Facebook.
Of course.
Post it on Facebook. I Hate Positive Thinking, a solo show by Faith Helma, runs January 22nd through February 7th, Fridays through Sundays at 7:30 p.m. All shows are at the Shout House, located at 210 Southeast Madison. And you can find out more about the Shout House at shouthousepdx.com. And also Faith Helma. fertilegroundpdx.com, and you can get all that info at fertilegroundpdx.com or stageandstudio.org. Now, the Shout House is the hand-to-mouth space, right?
Yes, that's where space. I'm doing the show.
All right. Yeah. So it seems like people need to get there early, though. How many does it seat there?
It's an intimate space. So yeah, get there early.
Get your tickets. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts, just now talking with Faith Helma and also Nicole Lane. And I'd like to turn now to playwright Sue Mock and actress Grace Carter of The Yellow Wallpaper. And The Yellow Wallpaper is a short story. It was first published in 1892, and it's regarded as the first important American work of feminist literature, and it was written by Charlotte Perkins Gilman as an indictment of the medical system, but also the oppression of women at the time. And we hear a lot about, you know, how the medical system was used to control women during the Victorian era. Sue, do you want to talk a little bit about that, or Grace? I mean, whose idea was it first to conceive this? Was it Grace's idea?
It was Grace's idea.
Yeah.
Okay, well, blame her.
So Grace, both of you. Well, I mean, what was your interest, your personal interest in The Yellow Wallpaper?
Oh, well, when I first read the story in undergrad in a women's lit class, I was an English minor. I just fell in love with it. And I think it's interesting when you talk to people when they about their experiences of reading the short story. I think it has such a strong sort of visceral quality to it, and people really hold on, you know, it really stays with them. So I think I was sort of attracted. I maybe didn't understand entirely what about the story it was that was so drew me in and was so powerful, but it just stayed with me for years and years. And a little while ago, I was looking for something to start developing and working on, and I went back to it and reread it, and I still love it so much.
Yeah,
and
you
it
can
still
find
had so
it
much
online
punch.
Too. And
yeah.
I'm just surprised it was even published in the first place.
It's amazing. I mean, Charlotte Perkins Gilman then we started reading about, Sue and I started reading about Charlotte Perkins Gilman and in her life and how she came to write the story and what she did beyond it. And we became so entranced with her as well. And Sue can talk some more about that too. So.
Yeah, she was. She was married to an artist, Walter Stenson, and it was a marriage that probably should never have happened. And she was suffered. You know, it was interesting talking about power of positive thinking, because that was sort of the prescription for her when she went through this horrible postpartum depression. Like, just sit in a room and will yourself to be better. And of course, that did not work. And it almost literally killed her.
Well, she was confined in mm-hmm. her bedroom, essentially, for what, 2 months, or was it 3 months?
It wasn't even her bedroom. It was in this house of a guy by the name of Dr. Weir Mitchell, who was a famous physician and he treated a lot of women who were supposedly undergoing, you know, it was called the rest cure.
Right.
So,
Wow. So in thinking about this woman's situation and then the process of adapting this work, how did that go about? At one point, you know, Sue, you started writing a mm-hmm. script from it. What were some of the thoughts behind what you created?
Well, we did a couple of workshops with some actors and did All some right. improv. And one of the things that I thought really found interesting, especially after reading book about her and her relationship to her husband, is that everything he did, and I think even Weir Mitchell, for you know, they thought they were doing something really good. They thought, especially her husband, thought he loved her. He thought he was doing the right thing, but he just didn't get it. and that was the so that it's much more interesting to create him. A character who's acting out of a place of love but doing everything wrong than it is to, you know, write an oppressor, you know. Mm-hmm. And so with that character, started there and started looking at, like, imagining what their life would have been a little bit before this incident. And so I wrote a tiny little prologue. And then there's 12 scenes in the story, and then I wrote 12 little scenes in the play. And then Grace and we brought in Paige McKinney, did a lot of stuff with movement, and Grace did the video stuff.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Grace, mm-hmm. It's described as a multidisciplinary installation. We have a piece of music from the show, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the multimedia that you've created for
Absolutely.
This.
I think that the story is so rich with imagination, and
and I was really interested in the space. Obviously, the space that she resides in is so important, and her relationship to it and how it changes with her relationship to it. And so, you know, I think with video and the score, I was looking for more of a richer landscape for the audience to interact with, as well as the characters. And so the way that the score is used, there's actual moments of just straight on some movement, and so the score really supports those movement interludes that happen, and then and that was a piece that you just heard. That was one of those.
And who composed that?
That was Ron Mason Gassaway. Okay. He's our composer. And in terms of the video, the way that we've been using the video is to sort of it's a way to indicate some of her imagination in terms of what the outside versus the inside. She's confined in this space, but there's also this natural world outside. And so the video really supports a lot of that, the difference between the pattern of the paper and then this outside world, or the pattern of the room that she's in, the confinement of a room and the outside world. And the nice thing about it is that with video, you can be very permeable. Like the space can kind of have a permeable... Sure. transitional sort of feeling. So that's why we went with those.
It sounds
ideas.
Beautiful. Do you have a little piece that you could do from the show?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because you're the main character. So
I have to do a monologue because I don't have my scene partners here with me.
Okay.
But yes, it changes quickly, and that is why I must watch it always. It makes me think of all the yellow things I ever saw. Not beautiful ones like buttercups, but old, bad, foul, yellow things. Where are you? You're out there, aren't you? I think you get out in the day, but I can't be certain. You creep faster than I can turn. You're very good at creeping. That's you in the long shaded lane, creeping up and down. I see you in the garden, creeping all around the arbors. I see you on the road. When a carriage comes, you creep under the blackberry vines. It would be very humiliating to be caught creeping by daylight. Still, I see you. Yes, I see you. I think so, yes. Away off in the open country, creeping as fast as a cloud shadow in a high wind. But I can be fast. I can be fast.
That was Grace Carter doing a performance from The Yellow Wallpaper. I got chills. Coho Productions presents The Yellow Wallpaper by Sue Mock, conceived by Grace Carter and starring Grace Carter as well, and directed by Philip Cuomo. The show dates are January 21st through the 30th at 7:30 p.m. and January 24th and 31st at 2 p.m. Additional dates are January 15th, 16th at 7:30 p.m. and January 17th at 2 p.m. and February 4th, 5th, and 6th at 7:30 p.m. So you can get all of those dates and stuff, all that stuff at Coho Theater. And that's at cohoproductions.org. Or you can also just go there at 2257 Northwest Raleigh Street. That's Coho's Theater. And call them at 503-220-2646. I also have all that info at stageandstudio.org. Sue, in the time remaining, I also wanted to talk to you. This is sort of a side note. It's not Fertile Ground related, but I understand that the Shadow Testament, which was a Fertile Ground,
yes, it was
production. I'm not sure exactly when, but it's going to be produced at
3 years.
It was about 3 years ago. It will. So it got its start at Fertile Ground, yes. And it's going to be getting a full production at Clackamas Theater, right?
Yes.
So Clackamas Community College mm-hmm. Theater, and you want to tell us just a little bit about the story is fascinating. So let's remind our listeners it's a fascinating story of Oregon history about the Holy Rollers cult in the 1900s, early 1900s.
Yeah, it's loosely based on a incident that happened. It's called the Church of the Holy Rollers, and it was Joshua Creffield was a preacher, self-made preacher, who held these religious services in Corvallis and kind of enticed these women. There were some men, but mostly women, into his service. And it's about the story of this young woman who got kind of caught up in it in a relationship with her friend and her brother. And it's not strictly based on the, I mean, all the events in the play are events that happened, but I reordered them and tried to shape it like a tragedy. Mm-hmm. I kind of did this structural experiment because it is like a classical tragedy, the whole story. So that's what it
How
is.
How long and, was this cult around?
1904, like 3 or 4 years. And people went to jail and were sent to insane asylums. They lived in Waldport. In fact, a lot of them are buried in Waldport.
So it was the Oregon Coast?
Oregon Coast, yeah. Oh, wow. The same place where the two people with the, one of those computer alien cults in the early, in the 90s.
No,
the
I two, don't.
They were there at Waldport's a magnet for these.
Wow. I missed that part. Of course, there were so many cults in the 90s. What do you do? But what does the title of the Shadow Testament refer to?
There was a trial, somebody gets shot. One of the brothers who comes after the crowd gets shoot. Well, the, oh, okay, I'm doing a spoiler here, but the prophet gets shot by the brother of this young girl. Shoots him in the head in the streets of Seattle. And there was a trial, and the jury of the trial was all men. It was so interesting, this sort of turn of the century, like what was happening with women. All this stuff kind of connects. So there was a trial of all men, and it was one of the first trials where somebody was let off on the grounds of insanity, temporary insanity. So the brother got off. So the sister then, who was in the cult, shot her brother in the head and was put away as a crazy person. Same crime, exact same crime. And she never got to testify. So my idea for the play was, well, this is her testament.
It's a great title, sounds like a great play. So Clackamas Community College presents Sue Muck's The Shadow Testament, directed by James Eichram, as the Theater Arts Department's winter term main stage production. And the play opens February 25th in the Osterman Theater. Performances through March 6th. And you can find out more information. They also have a Pay What You Can performance on Friday, March 4th at 10 a.m. For reservations, call clackamas.edu/theater or call 503-594-3153. That's 503-594-3153. Nicole Lane in the time remaining. And I think all of you, are there, you want to just do like one shout out for some other play that, or just mention some other play that you might want to check out at Fertile Ground Festival, Grace?
I have someone, for sure.
Go for it.
Or the Whale.
The Pete Ensemble.
Yeah. I really love their work. And also Paige McKinney is in it, and she is our movement director on our show.
Wonderful.
As well.
Wonderful.
So definitely that's one that's been on my radar to see.
I would support that recommendation.
And anything else, Sue?
I haven't been, honestly, through the program enough to make a recommendation.
Well, you know, it's really hard because there are 65 opportunities.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think it's basically taking a look at the website and looking at...
How about you, Faith?
Yeah, I've also just been like kind of looking around. So I do know, I'm excited to see this play called Hazardous Beauty. I was just talking to the playwright the
now
other
who's
night.
Who's doing that one?
Community Dream Productions.
Oh, okay.
It's Bonnie Ratner.
Bonnie Ratner. Right.
And Miracle. The Miracle's doing it.
Oh, yeah. We featured them last week. But
that
looks
really interesting to me.
Well, good. Well, everybody should check it out. You can find out more about Fertile Ground at 2016, an 11-day arts festival, performing arts festival, January 21st through the 31st at fertilegroundpdx.com. And, you know, just peruse the schedule. There's so many offerings. And kudos to you, Nicole.
Thank you, Dima, for covering us so well. And I do want to say also that festival passes are $50. So you can see many shows for $50.
Well, okay, you guys. You didn't hear that from KBOO.
I am so sorry.
But it's affordable for people
totally
who
affordable.
Wanted to check it out.
Affordable.
Nicole Lane, Sue Muck, Grace Carter, and Faith Helmut, thank you so much for joining me today, this morning.
Thanks,
and
Dima.
Have a great run during the festival. Hope you have great turnouts. All right.
Yeah.
That's it for Stage and Studio. Thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. I'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. Also like us on facebook.com/stagethelettersstudio or tweet me at @stagethelettersstudio. We're going to go out with more music from the Fertile Ground Festival. It's a show called Buried Fire. It's a new musical performance written by Dave Fleshner and Wayne Harrell. Shows are January 21st and 22nd at 7 7:30 p.m. at Michelle's Pianos on 600 Southeast Stark Street, and January 20th at 7:30 p.m. at O'Connor's Vault. On more, you can find out more info at fertilegroundpdx.org. Let's hear a song from the show. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Oh, this song is called I Knew I Had the Blues.
Looking in my eye, I saw you shrug that shoulder, saw you flick that little hair, saw you throw your head back and smile and laugh like you hadn't got a care. Well, I knew I had the blues, I didn't know why, and I didn't know how much a heart could break in just one night.
My landlord, a wealthy man, a living off rent like the fat of the land.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of Eviction Free 2016, a rally and march organized by Portland Tenants United. On January 15th at 4:30 p.m., tenants will gather at Portland City Hall to demand an end to no-cause evictions, landlord retaliation, and persistent discrimination against racial minorities. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Hello, neighbors, if you try to stop an eviction, I'd be by your side. Hello, neighbors, you know you should fight your right for the common good.
The KBOO Community Radio Artist in Residence Program assists artists working creatively with sound. Every year, one artist or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KBOO mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The goals of the KBOO Artist Support Program are to support and invest in individuals who are pushing themselves artistically using sound, whose work will impact the cultural landscape of Portland, and to bring those artists into the dynamic KBOO community of local, national, and international artists and activists. Applications for the 2016 KBOO Artist in Residence are due February 12th at 5 p.m. More information and application materials are at kboo.fm/AIR2016.
You stay in our love story.